What's up, everybody? You're listening to Songs That Saved Me. I'm your host, Ross James. Happy Friday to you all. We made it through another week. I know it's incredibly easy to lose track of days, weeks, months, who knows what's going on. So these podcasts have been a bit of an anchor for me. You know, I know that it's Friday because we got another new episode. Today, we got Andy Frasco, and I think you're really going to like this one. It's a little different than other ones that we've done. We get into some really heavy discussion. It's beautiful. It's bizarre. He's such an inspirational and positive dude. He loves music, loves to share it, loves to bring that positivity and energy to people all over the place. And he's really doing it in a lot of creative ways right now when we can't all be together. And it's something that I admire the way he's able to do that for a lot of people. And I know it means a lot to a lot of folks. So if you're liking the podcast, go on, give us a follow on Instagram at Songs That Saved Me. And on our Instagram page, there's a link in our bio that'll take you to our Spotify playlist, which is always growing and features all the songs that we talk about here on the show. So if you're interested in hearing the original version of any of these tunes, you can just log on to our Instagram page, click the link, and go right to that Spotify playlist. So don't forget to leave us a review right here in the Apple Podcast Store. And I hope you enjoy this discussion with the one and only Andy Frasco. What's up, Andy? How's it going today, man?
Doing good, bud. How you doing?
Oh, I'm hanging in there, you know. Days are melting together, for sure.
Isn't it weird that, like, governors have to remind you what fucking day it is? Like, Governor Cuomo, remember, this is Wednesday. I'm like, oh, yeah. I forgot.
Oh, man. So, yeah, you're hanging in during all this weirdness?
Just making the best of it. I'm pivoting into being a cam boy, I just found out. So,
Is that right?
It's crazy out here, man. It's like like we were talking about this earlier. It's the wild, wild west right now.
Yeah, 100%.
And, you know, some parts of the wild, wild west is fun, you know, like, but some parts are scary as fuck. Like, like, when are we going to play again? Like, are we going to be just like, talk show host now? Or yeah, what's our vibe?
It certainly seems that way, man. You know, you've been super busy. You know, it's all about kind of like diversifying kind of at this time. You know what I mean? Because you can't do what we've been doing and we got to find new ways to do it. And I've seen, you know, you're still putting out so much content and so much different content. It's really cool to see, you know. So are you digging kind of all these new projects that you're working on?
I like it. You know, I'm so ADD that I need to be working on five things at once. That's why the road was so perfect for me. Mm-hmm. You know, being on the road, driving 8 hours, confirming shows, you know, making podcasts in the van, you know, those type of things really keep me going. Because when my brain stands still, I start, you know, going through anxiety and going through like I'm useless. You know, it's like I have to keep on moving forward, or
totally, yeah.
I feel like I'm just a piece of shit. I got to work on that because life isn't always go, go, go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to really let yourself relax, you know, like I feel like it's an interesting time right now because hopefully people who aren't used to letting themselves relax are like giving themselves a little bit of a break during all this, you know, because we have all this time.
Totally.
But at the same time, you know, people that thrive on that busyness kind of thing where it's just sort of been taken away, I think it's got to be really tough for a lot of people right now, you know.
I think especially, I mean, yeah, it's like the honeymoon's over. You know, at first it's like, yeah, we get some time off. Fuck yeah. Now it's like, oh, fuck. We're going to get some time off till like, I don't know, September or the new year. So like, it's like pivoting.
Yeah, it's a lot of unknowns and, you know, just trying to stay as productive as I can. And I know you're doing the same, so.
Well, you know. Hustle admires hustle, dog. Have you watched the Jordan documentary yet?
No, I haven't. Tell me about it.
Oh my god, bro! You don't even have to be a sports fan. You just, if you're a fan of like narcissism and just like straight up determination to be the number one person in the world,
Yeah.
Dude, Michael Jordan. I mean, I've been a Kobe fan. And I always used to be like, ah, fuck Jordan. Kobe. I'm Kobe.
I had the Jordan, the free throw slam dunk poster. You remember that poster?
Oh, the tongue out with the legs out. Oh, dude.
Yeah, I had that in my bedroom when I was a kid.
It just shows his work ethic because, like, there's so much pressure to be the number one anything in the world. If you're on top of the mountain and you want to stay on top, mm-hmm. you're going to have to do press conferences and, like, all this other stuff, and everyone's trying to belittle you and ruin your legacy. And and then at the end of the day, you still have to execute. You still have to put out good content, you know? So, like, this Jordan doc is, like, it has inspired me through this whole quarantine. Like, you know, life isn't that bad. You know, you could be, you know, your dad could died from, you know, shot up from gambling debts and, you know, and yeah, still right, had to play right. fucking the championship game and on Father's Day and still execute 50 points. You know, just,
yeah,
it's mind over matter at this point. You know, it's like Michael Rapaport always says it. It's like the March Madness. This quarantine's like survive in advance. Like, don't let your mind get to you. Don't let people get to you. Just stay focused on the path, on the dream, and we'll get through this.
Yeah, no doubt, man. That's well said, and I agree with it. I'm stoked to have you on the podcast today. You know, I've been a fan of your podcast for a while, and it was one of the things that really made me want to do this and inspired me to do it. So it's super cool to have you on today, and I'd love to jump in and sort of hear about one of the first tunes that you thought of when you thought about this.
Oh my God. It's an honor because for you to say that, because you're such a legendary musician, you've played with all my friends and shit. I'm like, damn, Ross wants me on his gig. Well, I don't know if you wanted me. I'm like, I have to be on this.
I was stoked, man. You were on my list, you know, and I'm like, I'm kind of, you know, apprehensive to ask people, you know, like we've hung out a couple times or whatever, but you know, just like I sort of started with, like, you know, like good buddies, close friends, kind of, because I knew they wouldn't say no to me, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. You got your friends so first.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I've got like a list of people that I really want on the show, and you're on it, and I just like was trying to get it built up, and then I heard from you that you wanted to do it, so I'm just super stoked about it.
Yeah, man, I think you're doing a great thing. I think, you know, it really shows inside the musician from the three songs that inspired them. I mean, it's a great concept, and I'm just thankful that you invited me on, man. So thank you. Fuck yeah. Ross.
Yeah, man.
Fuck
yeah, right on. Well, cool. Let's
first song.
Let's hear it.
I gotta first start with Van Morrison. I love Van Morrison. He's my favorite. Growing up, he had stage fright, and listening to him play with the band, doing Caravan with the band, is so good. And it makes me cry every time watching the video of him doing his little kick, you know, at the end. Like, oh, yeah. he made it through the song because he was so nervous. You could tell he's closing. He had stage fright. He always used to, like, sing with his back against the wall. And, like, he was just so good at just being him. And, you know, in this video, you could see the sparkle in his eyes because, you know, his boys, you know, the band was, you know, it was their last gig. So, like,
yeah,
he really appreciated the moment. I love that about finding tracks, like live tracks. I love live tracks that you could really see the video and see the eye contact. Because, you know, I'm a live act. You're a live act, too. Yeah, you like playing live?
Yeah, I love playing live. I mean, it's like it's two different things for me. Like, I can totally, like, when I made my record, it was like, you know, all in to that and just like obsessed pretty much, you know, but it's, I don't even look at it the same way as playing live. It's a whole different thing. You know, it's like, I mean, I don't go to church or synagogue, you know, but I play gigs.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of thing for me.
But the same thing.
Yeah,
it's a religious experience for people 100%. Who aren't fucking religious, or maybe they are.
Totally, and maybe they are, but it's a whole. It's like the religion of humanity. You know, like there's the energy going through everybody, band and crowd at a live show, is unlike anything there is. I miss it so much right now.
I know. I just finally got the itch, because you know, like doing these live streams, like you're like a fucking crazy person. Once you take off your headphones and you realize the whole room is pitch fucking quiet and you're just like sweating and out of breath and just like, I'm like, what the fuck am I doing right now? You know,
but is there really anybody watching? You know what I mean?
Like, exactly. And you're worried about if people are actually watching the computers, you know, you on a computer and like my mom's watching, like, and my mom's like, this guy's on drugs. This guy's, you know, I'm sorry, mom. But let's listen to Van Morrison. This song is fucking, I love this song so much. Sweet. This is my favorite part. Oh, not yet. I love this song, dude.
So good, man. That version, too. Like, you know, I love Van Morrison. Always love Van Morrison. And, like, you find out more about him. You find out more about his music, like, every day. Like, you know, I never even heard about the stage fright thing.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I've heard that, like, he's, like, notoriously challenging, shall we say, to work with.
Yeah. But,
I mean, the stage fright totally makes sense, you know? Like...
Yeah, you're like wondering why he's such a dick sometimes. You're like, yeah. You're like, because I've heard some horror stories about him too. But and then he writes such romantic, intimate songs that it has to be,
yeah.
I mean, it has to be a stage fright thing, or he's just insecure about himself.
Yeah, totally. I mean, those are the only reasons people are like that. Nobody's just a dick to be a dick, you know. Like,
I know.
There's issues going on, you know.
Have you ever done therapy before?
I did therapy when I was younger, and I've done, you know, with like the spiritual guidance of my fiance, I've done some like a lot of self work, you know, in the last couple of years, and we've done a little therapy together.
Hold on. When you say spiritual guidance, like ayahuasca or just
but that is something that we want to do. I've never gone down that path, but
yeah,
we've
either,
talked about it. Just sort of like, you know, she's done a lot of work, on herself and just like, you know, being the best version and not running from shit, you know, like we all do, like I especially have done.
Yeah.
And you know, there's so many awesome resources online, like guided meditations and shit like that, you know, and we've done a lot of that together.
It's amazing, man. It's good to have a ride or die who's always looking after your mind too, you know.
Yeah, no doubt. No, I'm super lucky,
you know. Shout out, hold on, I got here, shout out to your wife. Fuck yeah, Ross's wife. I just got this board where I could put soundboards in. I love it, dude.
Oh man, like on the radio, like a Howard Stern.
Yeah, that's one of my biggest inspirations, man. Growing up,
Stern,
yeah. Man. Because I really didn't get into music until I was like 17, 18. But I've always
that right?
Yeah. I didn't start playing music. Hold on one sec. Listen to this part. Breaks down the band. I love that. Okay. Yeah, I haven't really...
Fucking Levon, dude. Oh, my God.
God, isn't that the most... I ever since I heard Levon's story, I'm kind of indifferent on Robertson, on Robbie. You ever meet him?
Did I meet Levon?
No, Robbie Robinson.
Oh, yeah. No, I never met Robbie, yeah. What'd you say?
Yeah, like, you know, like... like, he didn't... I don't think... The reason why Levon got broke... Because I don't think they gave him any songwriting credit.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and most of the tunes were written, you know, kind of inspired by Levon's life and stories Levon had told and all kinds of shit. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he got shafted for sure.
I feel bad for him, man.
In that regard. Yeah, I mean.
Because he was the voice, man. He was the voice of that.
Yeah, no doubt. The glue.
Yeah, exactly. The glue.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I dig Robbie Robertson's guitar playing and stuff, but like probably my least favorite member of the band.
Yeah.
even though like all the tunes came from him, supposedly.
Yeah, but fuck you, Robbie. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. I'm just kidding. I don't want to cause him any. But
so what did you do? What were you into before the music thing? What was your like passion, kind of?
I was into the music industry when I was like 12. I've been like 6 foot since I was like 12. So like I was into sports. I was into agents. I wanted to be an agent so bad. Like I'd memorized Jerry Maguire. I love Jerry Maguire so much. And then I fell in love with the music industry. It was like, I'm 32. So like it was, I don't know, 2004. I worked at my first record label, Drive-Thru Records. I faked my age because I was so tall and like, started working at Capitol Records and booking all these like pop punk and rock bands.
Yeah, Drive-Thru Records was all the pop punk shit, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I started booking like Hello Goodbye and like Newfound Glory and like.
No way.
Yeah, I wasn't the main agent, but every time they needed to do a LA show for the publicists and stuff to try to get, you know, the labels all pumped up, because Drive-Thru is a sub label of Geffen. So like after. It's kind of fucked up. So like after they sell 100,000 records or 200,000, I forgot the deals were, but they get bumped up to Geffen. And, you know, it's like when you're with an indie label that loves you and finds you and treats and nourishes you and feeds you when you're fucking broke for the first couple records, you know, and then you get to the big machine and you just get swallowed up. And then you don't really hear from a lot of these bands. So it's just crazy.
It's the machine, yeah.
It's the machine, but, you know, it's like, You it's just part of their deal. I mean, when you have sub labels, you know, you're getting paid, you know, the sub labels getting paid like millions of dollars to you know, farm league. It's like kind of like farm leaguing in a AAA baseball. Yeah. So I was doing that for a while, and then it was 2006 when like LimeWire and like
Kazaa
like shit, and then instead of firing the old people who don't understand digital media, they fired all the young kids. So I got fired, which was probably a blessing in disguise, because I'd be like a pissed off record label exec by now, probably. And you know, because I never really did drugs or anything until I was like 22, 23. So I started playing music. I started writing songs, and I said, I'm just going to market myself. I was also getting pissed off because all these bands that I'd work hard for and just like blood, sweat, and tears finding them shows in like buttfuck, you know, Mississippi and shit for, you know, band from LA. Like, you know, I was like, they're just coming in here to, you know, hook up with our women and shit, you know, just like you get all that shit. And I just said, I'm just going to market myself. I'm going to hire musicians on Craigslist and just try to stay on the road as long as I can. I had like $6,000 left from my bar mitzvah money. And I bought a E350 van named Goldilocks, and I drove that bitch to the ground, dude, for like 7-8 years, and would just hire musicians in every town, like Chuck Berry. And
no way, really?
Yeah. And then I found Sean Eccles, my guitar player. I found Andy Avila, my drummer. Ernie was in my town. I got lucky with Ernie. He was working at a bank, and he just looked cool. He was at a guitar store. He's like this big old Asian dude. I'm like, damn, this guy looks cool as fuck. So I just like talked to him, and then he's like, I used to play sax in high school and college. And he was studying in college, and he stopped because, you know, not a lot of sax. There's not a big sax market, I guess, in LA, you know, the pop culture of the world, you know, maybe in like, you know, 90s or something, but wrong era for Chang Chang. So, yeah. So he came. So I'm like, I got this show in like 2 days at the guitar store that I saw him at. He showed up with his sax, and, you know, I had to leave on tour like 4 days later. I'm like, well, this is your chance, Chang, if you want to come with me. and quit your job. And he quit his job, and he's been with me for 11 years.
No way, man.
Dude, so this, ride or die.
That's such a rad story, man. You don't get to, you don't hear that shit enough these days, you know?
Oh, man.
Like, so this band now has been together in this form for that long?
So, yeah, pretty much. I mean, I have a problem with bass players. And I used to have a problem with drummers. Like, not like a problem, like, oh, fuck bass players. But it was more like, it was like, I just had a curse. I mean, we'd go through bass players, like, every couple years. And then we went through drummers. I mean, I'm hard on my drummers. I'm like Jordan, where if I need to be fast-paced, like, you need to be fucking kicking the kick drum hard. You need to make me, you know, I'm a psychopath like that. I need my drummers to be fucking, you know, big old calves, dog, just just smashing the kick drum. But now, I mean, you know, I've also had like a commitment faux problem where I'm scared to commit to anything my whole life. Like, I've never had a girlfriend, never had a really commitment like that besides music. So I finally put 101 together. Like, I need to have a band that feels like a band, that they feel like they're not just a side piece, and they are part of the machine. So we've been together now. This whole band's been together now about 8 years with our drummer.
That's great, man. That's awesome.
You know, this is, fuck, dude. The music industry is so hard. You gotta, like, how many shows a year do you do, Ross?
I mean, it depends. Like, when I was living on the West Coast, if you counted everything I did at Terrapin, man, it was like, I mean, anything between like 5 and 10 a week.
Oh yeah, like, you lived like, around
like
there, didn't you?
Double time, like doing 2 or 3 on the weekend. You know what I mean? I lived, like 15 minutes from Terrapin, and
Terrapin is not Weir's place.
It's Phil's place.
It's Phil's place.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, for a while there, it was crazy, you know. And then it kind of got me a little burnt out, you know, just like that much. And the last couple of years, I've kind of, as much as I can, tried to like do a little bit of quality versus quantity kind of balance out with my stuff, you know.
Yeah,
and it's probably closer to like 100. A year at this, then, you know, this year obviously is fucked, but you know, in the past couple of years, it's been closer to 100.
Well, do you feel that's, I'm like interviewing you now. I apologize, man. I'm going
no, it's good, man.
Do you feel like 100 is enough for you?
I mean, some days, yeah, you know, like it just depends. I've had this weird kind of path in the music industry where I went from like, you know, I kind of skipped, and not by choice, because I've always like had this sort of romantic view of this existence, but I kind of skipped the whole van trip. I haven't done a lot of like more than just like a week here or like a couple weekends or whatever, you know, like I haven't done 3 weeks in a van. I've never done that. Like doing the gigs with Phil took me from like hustling my ass off doing like local kind of club, like tri-state circuit kind of shit, you know, to like flying to New York to play 5 nights at the Cap, you know, just
fucking
like
nuts, dude.
Right. Total opposite end of the spectrum. And like, you know, I'm obviously incredibly grateful for that kind of thing, but it feels weird. And I feel, you know, like to get a little real about it, there's definitely like some weird guilt and kind of unworthiness that I carry with me, you know, for not having that experience. You know, I mean, I've worked my ass off my whole life and I've been down, but I've never roughed it in the way that a lot of like my musical brothers have, you know, in that particular sense.
I mean, roughing it is relevant, right? Like, did totally. You ever have any, so, all right, now I'm gonna go psychologist on you. So what about your younger life? Like, did you always hold this guilt about you don't deserve this?
I don't know. I mean, my younger life was like up and down from being like a spoiled little brat to like having nothing, like up and down a little bit. You know what I mean? It was really, it was hard to feel one way or the other, I think, as I was growing up. I mean, I don't know. I never really noticed that feeling until, you know, all of a sudden I was playing these big gigs with like fucking musical legends. And I'm just like, how in the world are we doing this?
You just wake up and you're at the fucking cap for 5 days.
Like, I mean, the first time I remember being like, what the fuck? And like, it spun me out, you know, like on the gig, it spun me out like halfway through the gig. I was like, I wasn't present the way I should have been, you know, because I was just like, what the fuck is going on? Playing with Scofield, Warren Haynes, Medeski, and Russo, and Phil in Central Park.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jesus.
And
fuck.
I'm just like, you know, I'm like,
it's fucking nuts, dude.
What, 27 or 28 or something like that, you know, and Phil wanted to play one of my tunes, and like none of the guys knew it. And it's just like, it was a head spinner for sure. I mean, that shit is like, I've definitely dealt with it a lot, you know, over the last couple of years, and I'm more at peace with it. But you know, that just as far as like my path is quite different, I feel like, than a lot of people. But everybody's trip is different too, you know.
Mm-hmm. Like, do you feel like you would like imposter syndrome?
A what?
Imposter syndrome?
Oh,
like
imposter.
You don't...
Oh, well, there's a little bit of that, because like I grew up like not listening to the Grateful Dead, not understanding it. Thinking it was something else than it was. And, you know, I don't try to sound like Garcia at all like that. I mean, I love Garcia's playing and everything. And but it's like I can't do anything but be me. That's all that's all I can do. And Phil digs that. And that's what's so cool about it. And he's like had me play with him for so long. But I mean, I come from like punk rock and country music, you know, like I play that shit different than most of the deadheads are used to hearing.
Oh, word?
Yeah.
Punk rock and country music?
That's the kind of shit I listened to growing up. I got a Social Distortion tattoo on my arm, dude.
Shut the fuck up. Hold on, Ross, we got to be homies, dog. Because I mean, like I feel the same way, because I grew up listening to like, you know, rock, and I was a sports guy, and I didn't really know anything.
I was a basketball freak when I was a kid.
Yeah, and like I see a lot of sports in the way in music, you know. I look at coaches like I look at band leaders.
Totally.
Like Phil Jackson's the ultimate band leader. Like he really is. Like I am like fixed. I'm hard on fucking Phil Jackson right now. That guy had five egos, you know, the best players in the world, and you have to micromanage egos to get the best content out of people. I mean, that's basically super bands, you know. Like I think of bands like Traveling Wilburys and shit. How many egos there are in that, you know, like such great musicians, but like, you know, maybe they're in their headspace, you know, who knows what they are outside of what we see them on the public light, you know.
Totally,
so it's like,
yeah.
It's pretty amazing to, like, you know, Phil is your fucking Phil, dog. Phil is your Phil, dog. Holy shit, dude.
I mean, but, like, the thing, you know, that the way Phil's kind of, the way he does that, the way he's able to do that to sort of neutralize the ego thing is he's fucking Phil.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Who's going to show up in a shitty mood or have an ego around the dude who played in the band that started the whole fucking thing?
But think about if Phil has to like lead the Dead or John.
Well, you know what's so funny about the Dead is like they all learn to play. I mean, this is, you know, from what all the stories I've heard, and you know, I've been immersed in the shit for a long time now. But it's like, you know, they all followed Garcia, and he was like, he didn't want to be a leader at all, you know, but they all kind of learned to play around him. And there kind of just wasn't a leader. It was just this sort of implied, like, we're following this guy musically. You know what I'm saying?
Do you think that's why nothing happened for a while after he died?
Yeah. I mean, they weren't, you know, used to, none of them like ever had done their own thing before, you know, I don't think.
And, or just like trying to keep the band going. Like, it's like, oh man. It's like I'm going back to Michael Jordan again. That year that he fucking went to basketball, and mm-hmm. Scottie Pippen was supposed to be the leader.
Went to baseball
when Jordan went to baseball.
Yeah,
Scottie was supposed to be the leader, And they didn't want to pass the ball to Scotty. It was like 2.1 seconds left. It was like the semi-conference playoffs. And he's like, if you're not passing me the ball for the last shot, I'm going to sit out this game or this shot. And everyone was like, fucking, dude, we're a team. What the fuck? And Kukoc fucking made the shot like a G. And then but it ruined the chemistry of the season. They could have, he would have just been a team player and been like, okay. Then, I don't know how I got there, but you know what I'm talking about, Ross?
Yeah, no, 100%, man. Tony Kukoc, for sure.
Tony fucking Kukoc. No, but like, it's like when someone leaves, like Jordan was that leader. Like, we're doing this. We got each other's backs, ride or dies. And then when the leader leaves and someone else has to either take initiative or don't to keep the, to keep the band together, the gang. That's why I love the band, dude. Because, there is so much turmoil between them, and they still fucking played. They got on stage, they turned on, and they fucking did it.
It's fucking 100%.
I love that shit. All right. Got me all teary eyed. Sorry, bro.
I love it. Just to bring it back to Van Morrison.
Yeah. I bring it back. Well, yeah, now, But
I want to hear like when you first heard this tune, and is it what made you want to go like down the path that you ultimately did with music?
Yeah, 100%. I loved his 4-1 chord progressions. Like I felt every song was 4-1.
I mean, that's the shit to be able to do that much with just that.
It made him a style. I mean, he rode that style his whole career, and no one's really pissed about it. I mean, some people, some diehards, but like like people who just always are like fucking ADD about music, like this needs to be changed.
Right.
I like perfecting things. I like perfecting a set list all year. That's one thing hard about the jam scene. Like, I'm trying to make like a perfect show in my eyes. Just for me to be like feel satisfied with a perfect show. And sometimes you're not done chipping at the wood of that set, and all of a sudden, like, you gotta, you have to play a completely different set the next night,
I hate that, in all honesty, man.
Me too, like, man.
When I was younger, all the bands I'd listen to, I mean, there were bands that I loved that I'd go see two nights in a row, I'd drive, when I was growing up in Michigan, I lived in like near Detroit. I'd see the Detroit show and then I'd see the Grand Rapids show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it was a band I really dug, and if they played the same show two nights in a row, I was fine with that. Like, what is like, you play three nights in a row, you can't play the same song twice. It's crazy to me.
I know it's crazy, and like I tell my manager this, like once we start getting successful, I'm thinking about my big plans, not my right now plans, but like. 3 days in a row is, when I do 2 days in a row at festivals, I feel like I have so much pressure on, I put so much pressure on myself. Because, it's like, I don't know. I also don't want to be called a one-trick pony. So it's like, and you'll get that categorization if you play the same fucking songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's fucked up. It's like a catch-22. Like, I want to perfect this song. I want to perfect the bit. I want to perfect my fucking shtick or my whatever I'm doing in that moment. Mm-hmm. And I only could do that once a week. So, or once every region or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, there's pros and cons to it, too, because, like, you get that side of the jam band scene, but at the same time, there's nobody else that you could, like, take the risks that you're kind of expected to take in front of. There's no other crowd other than, like, the jam band.
That's very true. I mean, this is why I fell in love with these. They've accepted my weirdness.
Yeah. No, I feel the same way. Yeah.
Like, I'm not dogging the jam scene at all.
No,
I think but it's funny, though, because it's making me a better musician.
And there's no doubt about that.
And it's making me a better entertainer. Like, fucking doing this shit show every week, like, trying to make new content, like, new videos and shit. I'm like, this is what the Dead had to do every day, in a sense, with their brains, Like, they had to make a new set list, open up the brain, just go with the
Yeah, and there was no model for it like there is now, It was all new at the time. So
is Phil a perfectionist?
I mean, he's an ex like an exploratory perfectionist, I guess, would be my answer to that. You know what I mean? Like he has like perfect pitch and is more sage-like musically than anybody I've ever come across as far as like knowing, hearing a part, knowing exactly what it's going on. Like, I mean, there was a while where he like, I don't know if he still does it, but he would like, he didn't have his own mic in his in-ears and he could hear himself through like bone conduction or some shit. I can't remember what it was.
Get
like
the fuck it was out of
he's
here.
Like an alien, dude. He's insane. But at the same time, he lives for those moments where there is no perfect, there is no imperfect. It's just like we're on this journey together and wherever it goes is perfect, you know?
Fucking beautiful, dude. Yeah. Shout out. Yeah,
no,
shout out to Phil.
No doubt.
Dude, what a guy to have you just fucking building knowledge from,
oh,
bro.
Oh, my God. And, like, the patience of it. Because when Terrapin started, like, I don't know why people kept coming to see us play. Like,
really?
I
why?
Mean, well, you know, like, I had never even heard any of this music before. And, like, what the hell is Birdsong, you know? And we're, like, playing it. I'm playing it with him and Weir. Never heard it before. And you know.
What a fucking
trip. It's
a
trip. And there were, like, there were 5 to 10 of us younger musicians. Sort of, it came in waves of different people over the first few years. But we used to do this thing called Phil School, or we called it Phil School. But on the weekends, we'd, like, go down and we'd set up in the fucking great room. You know, at Terrapin, the big room.
Holy
there. And,
shit.
And he'd pick like 3 either songs or jams or kind of exercises. And then he'd put in-ears on and like listen to us. And then we'd do it. He'd talk about it. We'd do it again. And it was like boot camp kind of. That aside from just learning the whole like Grateful Dead canon at the time.
Motherfucking Phil Jackson up in here, dude. I'm telling you. It's all... Bro, that's what Phil used to have. Phil Jackson used to have rehearse or practice. I got him in the fucking. I officially became a musician because all I used to think about was, but you know what I'm talking about, practice, the practice hooping, and he would just do one practice on Tuesdays, just meditate on your passes on the game. You know, he's like he'd put like. Like fucking sage on you and shit. And like,
really?
This is such a lit. Yeah, I swear,
like back
dude,
then, that wasn't as that would have been way weirder then than now, right? I mean, like, when are you talking with the Bulls or with the Lakers?
With the Bulls and the Lakers, shit. And he also let fucking Rodman go fuck hookers and go gamble for 5 days before the playoffs, and because he knows that's just what Rodman needs to take a day off, like. And he was missing for like he was missing for I don't think it was 5 days. They let him go for 1 day, and he was missing for 3 days. And Michael Jordan had to go to the hotel and say, "Get your ass to practice." But like after that, he was relaxed and he knew the song. So like having that Phil School is like no different than like having a mentor like Phil Jackson.
Yeah, I can see the parallel. You know, I mean, he's definitely been that. For all of us that have gotten, and I mean, not just, you know, this generation of like me and Graham and Coford and younger dudes, but like you can see it in everybody that's played with him, sort of the way you can see it in everybody. I got to meet him one time, but I never really got to know him, Colonel Bruce. But you know, you can tell when somebody played with Bruce. You know what I'm saying?
The whole theory of intention.
Yeah, exactly. And you can hear that with, you can hear it and see it with people who've played with Phil, you know, Warren and Jimmy and, you know, Russo and all those guys. You can definitely see the effect of getting to play with somebody like that.
He gives me chills, bro.
Yeah, no doubt.
Dude, you got a legend. You are learning from the Michael Jordan of bass players, dog.
100%, man.
All right, back to Van Morrison.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sorry, bro.
No,
sorry.
No, no. I mean, I dig it. So that tune sort of set you on this road of being a musician. What's the next kind of song along the road?
The next song, I got into folk heavy. I'm always into folk. I never really got into like funk music until like a couple years ago, and like I got into blues first after folk. But this guy Damien Rice, mm-hmm. I went to his concert when I because I went to some I was like well I was 18 I got into San Francisco State. I'm from Southern California, Los Angeles, so San Francisco State was the cheapest school. So like I got into like Indiana. I was gonna go to like go, you know, hook up and fucking get drunk and be a frat boy. And I realized that I'm probably gonna quit because deep down I've always wanted to be a musician. So I was like, if my mom's gonna pay $20,000, I'll probably have to have a guilt trip about quitting every year. So it'd be like $80,000. So I went to the San Francisco State, Daly City, and I saw this guy play a show, and it was the next day I quit school. Wow. And I bought that van.
Shit.
But this was the song, Delicate. I want to show you the live version. Right. Can I show you the live version? Yeah. Oh, it changed my life. And then I followed Damien for a couple years, but I heard he's an asshole, so I didn't ever meet him.
Oh, no.
But it's okay.
That's a drag when you find that out. Like I told you, I had a social distortion tattoo on my arm. I did monitors. I used to be a sound engineer. I was a house monitor tech at Royal Oak Music Theater for Social D one time. And Mike Ness was such a jerk to me. I mean, you know, benefit of the doubt, maybe he was in a shitty mood, having a bad day, not judging you, Mike Ness. If you want to do the podcast, you should do it. But,
yo, Mike, get on the fucking show. Let's settle this right now.
He was not cool to me, and it bummed me out. And I had just gotten the tattoo, and I was just like, oh, fuck.
I know, dude. That's the worst, dude. This band I used to work for Drive Thru, and that was the first reason why I got into going to Drive Thru, because I loved that band. He was a like surfer dude with a upright piano, but we played with his band this summer, and I had this moment with Andrew. I'm like, hey man, I just want to let you know you're the reason why I play piano. You're the reason why I wear sandals and shit. And his fucking guitar player's wife ruined the moment. Like, are you Andy Frasco? I guess I hooked up with her in middle school. And I guess she didn't, I don't know what happened, but she started, we've hooked up. I'm like, damn, it ruined this moment I had with my favorite musician. And I really did not remember, bro. And I was like, oh fuck. I'm like, I was kind of buzzed, and I didn't remember. I felt like an asshole. And it ruined my moment, and I'll always remember that.
You know, it can't,
getting back to Damien Rice.
Just a little side note, it can be a positive experience meeting like your heroes. You know what I mean? For me, like Neil Casal and John Graboff playing in Ryan Adams' band,
oh, man,
were big influences on me wanting to be a professional musician. And then, you know, getting to meet them and make music with them was amazing, and they were like always super cool. So
yeah,
you know, just a little,
yeah, there's always the other side of that.
Yeah
rest in peace, buddy. And then because I met Joe Walsh, and he was like,
oh, shit.
It was fucking we opened for him. It was the coolest thing ever.
Oh my god,
his wife was like, talk to the kids, Joe, because he's like a fucking eagle. So he goes up the elevators, he comes on stage like 5 minutes before, and then so the tour manager's like, everyone just, all the band just wait by the elevator, he watched your show, and we saw him at the end, walking back from the show, the elevator, and he's like I used to do all that fucking jumping around and shit, but I'll leave that up to you now. I'm like, yeah, dude, I got the bump from Joe Walsh. But his wife had to say, talk to the kid,
yeah,
Joe.
Right.
I love it, dude. You know who his wife, Joe Walsh's wife, is? Ringo Starr's sister.
Whoa, really?
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, bizarre.
All right, let me play this Damien Rice song. Sorry, but shout out to our heroes.
Yeah, no
shout out to our heroes. Okay, hold on. I love a live record with good crowd loudness.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. me my kiss. When we are alone, when nobody's watching, we might take it home. We might make out when nobody's there. And it's not that we're scared, it's just that it's delicate. And so why'd you feel my sorrow with the words you borrowed from the only place that you've known?
The reason why I love that so much is, like, he didn't need everyone there. He didn't need a full band for everyone to get, you know, to listen. Like, you heard a pin drop in the room when he's talking, when he's just singing his little songs. And, like, that's inspired me. Like, that's what I want to do. I want people to be fully committed to the moment. And, like, that's what Damon taught me for sure.
I love that, man. I love music like that, you know, that can be, like, it's like what we're talking about with the van thing. It's that 4-1 thing, you know, the first half of that progression or whatever, where it's just this simple thing. But like you said, it's perfect, you know, and powerful.
Man, it's crazy. I bet that's what happens when Phil talks and shit and Bobby talks.
People listen.
They fucking listen, dude. It's important because they're not just, you know, that's one thing I want if I ever have a legacy or whatever. It's that people listen, you know, by the end of my career, you know, or end of my life, I could have that power, or I could get everyone completely present. I mean, that's living, right?
Yeah.
When you're not.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we're all trying to do, you know, when we're playing, like, for ourselves, mm-hmm. and everybody in the band and everybody at the show, like, trying to get to that place together.
Yeah, because those are the best shows.
100%.
When
yeah.
you're completely present and they're completely present.
Mm-hmm.
And you just feel that shit. It's crazy.
No doubt.
It's really crazy, especially when the band's vibing. Everyone's, you don't have to say shit. You guys just look at each other like, yeah, fuck yeah. And then you see the crowd in it and, like, laughing and just hanging on. You know, that's why I love stand-up comedy. Like, those guys like Dave Chappelle who are, like, so good about it. Like, some Dave Chappelle, I like studying people's careers and shit.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I get high on that shit. And studying Dave's, like, discography of bits. And then every 3 days, he'll just go to a small comedy club and just talk and see if he could get people to laugh just as well from just talking and, like, talking about some heavy shit. You know, that's the real shit, dude. That's like...
Wow, I didn't know that.
Well, dude, it's crazy because he has his bits. Then he'll go to the comedy club because his actual show, he'll sell 4,000 tickets,
right,
or 3,000 tickets. And then, you know, he'll go to that same comedy club that night or the next day, or on a Tuesday, he'll hang out in the town for 5 days and just, like, talk to people. It's fucking awesome, dude.
So rad.
It's kind of like our life right now. We're getting paid to talk to people. Well, we're not really getting paid to talk to people, but we're hoping that's the plan. Yeah.
We're working towards the goal of getting paid. Oh, man. So you know, like, I've seen you at festivals. You know, I think the first time I saw you do a set was at Mountain Jam a while ago. I don't even remember what year, but I've played some of the same festivals that you've at, and I've seen, you know, parts of your set there. And then when you sat in with Mahali, when I was playing guitar with him here in Denver,
yeah.
I remember, I obviously saw you do that. Now, I haven't really seen you, like, do like that moment, like that we're just that stripped down thing? Is that something you do in your show? I mean, obviously it's not a festival thing, but you know what I'm saying? I'm just curious.
You know, I was always scared to do it.
Really?
Yeah. I never used to do it besides this year when my songwriting has changed. Like I started right when I was like heavy into like coke and like one night stands for like the first 10 years, 11 years of my life. I was just like, just trying to write songs to make people dance and get some pussy. Like that was like what I was like trying to do. And I was getting addicted to it. And it wasn't the music that I wanted to write. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I grew up listening to folk. Like my favorite artists are like, Wilson Pickett. Well, for the lyrics. Yeah, yeah. And then John Craigie, he's my all time favorite. Nice. Right now. And he's like this new guy. Yeah, totally. And then Damien Rice, you know, folk guys. I used to love Death Cab for Cutie. I was a sad bitch, dude. I was like, I got bitch boy music in me. And it's like, I love it. And I just love that music. And that's always what I wanted to be. And I just fell across into funk world. And I started loving it and like started loving the energy. But I started writing music now, like just softer stuff. And my new record, Keep On Keeping On, is all, it's a little bit softer than like, you know, my past songs like Blame It On The Pussy or whatever. So it's like I'm changing my style. I'm just trying to talk about shit now, you know, like,
and you're trying to be real, you know what I mean? And
yeah, and talk about mental health and talk about depression,
which is really inspiring to see, you know, especially to see a dude or a man or whatever the fuck you want to say it's talking about it, because it's definitely been something that women have been talking about for a lot longer than we have, you know. And I think it's really, really important for guys to feel like they can talk about this shit, you know.
Yeah, we just evolved later.
Yeah,
with our emotions. Yeah. You know, like, I bet girls, they're like, oh, fucking finally. You know, just like, we're all finally in touch with our feelings and shit. It took us 2020 years, you know, like. It's like, oh my God, you know. But you know, that's the thing about, you know, once we learn what's wrong with us, we were always afraid to know what's wrong with us. Yeah. You know, that imposter syndrome we go back to in the beginning.
Yeah, we're afraid to admit it, you know.
We're afraid to admit that we have fucking feelings, we're sensitive. Yeah. And we're insecure sometimes, and like, you know, that shit's important.
Yeah,
to like,
I mean, you know, from following you on social media and shit and seeing what an important part of your whole existence this stuff is, I mean, it seems like it really resonates with your fan base. And it seems like, you know, from where I sit, you know, and the feedback that you get from fans on social media and all that kind of thing, that you could totally have these kind of moments on stage. And I don't feel like the funk and the folk thing this day and age are disconnected. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Are you finding totally that?
Totally, man. Because you look at guys like Tyler Childers and like,
oh, yeah,
Sturgill and Jason Isbell. Like, those guys rock. They rock the fuck out. And then they'll put in their song the most beautiful lyrics about depression, you know, whatever it is that, you know, Jason's talking about, or Tyler's talking about. I mean, I mean, Chris Stapleton, too. I mean, the lyrics on fucking Chris's albums are heavy as fuck. You know, it's real shit.
Yeah, I think, I feel like people are wanting that real shit and not, you know, throw away bullshit kind of songs right now, especially, you know?
Yeah, I agree, man. I mean, we need to start, I mean, this, we're stuck with our brains. And I guarantee you, our brains are asking us questions right now, especially this quarantine. It's like, what the, I mean, I never thought about that. I never thought about my great aunt. Maybe, I don't know, like, maybe she did fuck me up. I don't know. Like, you know, like, shit like that, you know, like, it's like, you're alone with your thoughts in this quarantine. Like, you're going to get questions about, you know, about your present.
Yeah.
So we might as well start talking about that now while everyone is starting to be, as the kids say, woke as fuck.
No doubt. So just one more question about the Damien Rice song here, man. Do you still, you know, I can hear it in your voice. I hear the answer to the question pretty much, but do you still feel the same way about this tune? Does it inspire you the same way that it did that night that you heard at the show? You know what I mean?
Yes and no. Okay. I listen to this song too now, and I'm like, damn, I was sad as fuck.
Yeah.
When I was 19, and didn't know I was depressed. I was depressed for like 10 years, because the reason why I fell in love with that song is because it talks about intimacy, and he talks about all these little things that some people like me used to do is just shoo it away, but those are the most delicate things about life, you know?
Yeah.
Those interactions, those times when you fucking take ayahuasca with your main squeeze eventually, Ross. And, you know, like shit like that. Or just like having a talk, or just not even talking, just breathing with someone. I mean, that's all intimacy, and that's all just important. Just as important about life than the big dreams we have, you know? Yeah. That's what I'm starting to learn from quarantine. The little steps are just as important as the big vision.
I love that, man. It's beautiful, and it's the kind of shit that we should all be reminding ourselves every day, you know? Every little thing.
It's crazy, man. I mean, I was so selfish. I never thought about that shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you just get so focused on where you're going or where you've been or whatever, and your trip and all those things, that it's easy to get wrapped up in, you know. But you're not being present, like we're talking about.
Yeah, it's like same thing. Like you feel like you're not, like, how the fuck did I get here? I feel pissed that I didn't work the grind out.
Right.
Grind out the with the fucking minivan, right, and the top ramen and the fuck. I'm gonna tell you this, Ross, you're not missing much.
Well, I tell you,
enjoy the ride.
I ate plenty of top ramen, for the record. I've been there. Okay. Just not in the van.
Yeah, Phil's got that like Whole Foods top ramen. You know? We're gonna eat top ramen to show where you came from, but it's gonna be organic. Oh fuck! Oh,
that's good, man.
That's awesome.
Well, shit. Let me hear one more tune. Let's talk about one more tune.
Sorry,
no, this is good. This is great.
I'm just talking, dude. I took a big cap. I took a little, not big cap, but like just been working so much. Like I was looking forward to this. So I took a little mushroom so I could be present
good.
And not think about
good,
you
man.
Know, fucking dick jokes. And I'm doing a bit called the Summer of the Bush. The bushes are back. The summer, I'm going to tell all ladies and guys, bring the bush back this summer, 2020. Don't cut it out. Even let the sideburns on the legs rock. Just let people know that we fucking survived quarantine. Let the world know that we fucking did it, okay?
Wear it like a battle cool. scar, you know?
Wear it like a goddamn battle scar. Oh, fuck.
All right, what do you got next?
All right, here we go. This song changed my perspective about being a musician. It's John Craigie. I love John Craigie so much. I'm obsessed with him right now. He's the best. You know Craigie? He's NorCal or like Portland and folk scene.
Nikki, you know Nikki Bloom.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Nikki's dope.
Yeah, she's the best. We play together a lot. And she, last time we did a gig, which feels like 100 years ago, I think she was just gearing up for or had just finished a little run with him. And that was the first time I checked him out, and it was great. And I think he was on one of the, either the John Prine tribute or the Garcia.
Yeah, he was on Prine.
Yeah, yeah. So I saw him on that one, yeah.
He's great, man. You should listen to this record called Capricorn Retrograde. It's a live album from Mississippi Studios. Have you ever played there in Portland?
No, I've seen shows there, though, yeah.
Fucking sick. I love that room. It's perfect size.
Perfect size.
It's like, I mean, for intimacy, I mean, I feel like, how do you... We'll talk. That's a different conversation. We're going to have a different conversation. Okay. Well, let's do this again. You come on my show. How about you come on my show? We'll talk about
that. All right. Yeah, that sounds good, man. I'd love to.
All right. Fuck yeah. All right. Here's this song. But... I love this guy so much, and he's funny. He tells jokes between the shows, between the songs and stories and jokes inside the stories that turn into why he wrote the song, kind of like Guthrie, how Guthrie used to do it and shit.
I love that shit. Todd Snyder does that kind of stuff too. You know?
Yeah, Snyder. Yeah, this fucking song is great. I won't interrupt this song. Let's listen to this whole song.
All right, cool.
Let's get one thing straight. Bob Dylan never played here. Joni Mitchell never sang here. Dr. King never preached here. This is a new stage. This is a new space. And even if they had, what would it matter anyway? 'Cause the ghosts of the past cannot bring me any luck. All that matters is tonight. All that matters is tonight. And tonight, all that matters is whether or not I suck. Because it doesn't matter all the hype you heard, or the fact that you may or may not have heard any hype. It doesn't matter what record label I'm on, or the fact that I may or may not be on a record label at all. Doesn't matter what the paper said, or the fact that the papers may have been defeated. And it doesn't matter what Twitter said, oh, 'cause the revolution will not be tweeted. Yeah, all that matters is right here. All that matters is right now. All that matters is right here. And I might be sleeping on your couch tonight. I'm not sure if they told you yet. I know you want me to be more famous than that. Oh, but fame ain't got nothing to do with it. 'Cause I'd rather sleep on your couch and eat your cookies than sleep alone in some hotel room and not have any cookies at all. I came here to meet you. I came here to sing to you. I came here to meet you. So let's get one thing straight. Bob Dylan never played here. Leonard Cohen never sang here. Woody Guthrie never preached here. This is a new stage. This is a new scene. And if my generation's gonna make any impact at all, there's one thing we need to believe. We need to believe that the songs that we write can be better than the songs that were written by the legends of our past. We need to believe that the music that we make has the potential to be better than the music that was made by the legends of our past. Otherwise, what's the point? And I hope it's okay that I said that. I hope the older generation ain't pissed. It's just that I want a summer of love too. I want a renaissance. I want ours to be the best. I know it sounds conceited as hell. I know it sounds like blasphemy to say we could be better than the Beatles and Dylan and Beethoven. Oh, I'm not saying that it's me. All I'm saying is I'm trying. Me and my friends, we are trying.
Dude, that fucking gave me chills. Legend.
Dude, isn't that our life?
What's the name of that song?
Manifesto.
Fuck.
Like, what the fuck?
That's a damn good song.
You know, it's so true. We feel like we're not worthy to be these fucking fills. But God damn it, Ross, you are.
I mean, that's it. Like, we're all just part of the same thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Passing of the torch kind of thing, but it's so easy to lose sight of it.
Why? Because of ego?
I think you just get so wrapped up in it, you know, and I think that, I mean, have you ever met a guitar player that you actually liked that you, well, I've got, there's more to that.
like band therapy here pretty soon, dog.
Have you ever met a guitar player that you really, really dug what the way that they played and they weren't incredibly hard on themselves and lacked confidence?
Nope.
See what I mean? It's like, yeah. I don't know if it's just the nature of what we do that encourages that, or if the type of person that gets into this kind of thing has those issues to begin with. I don't know. You know, it's a chicken egg kind of thing, but between that and, you know, the rat race, it's a perfect term for what the music industry is.
Yeah.
You know, it's
survive in advance.
Yeah, 100%. And then there's all the other factors in play. You know, like it's not like you know people can, like, when I first started playing with Phil, you know, like, people would write reviews of the shows and stuff, and I'd be like, oh, I wonder, you know, what people thought. And then, like, you read a couple of reviews of somebody, like, saying that you fucking suck, or that, like, that was total shit or whatever. I don't read any of that shit anymore. You know, it took me like 3 months to realize that that's not a healthy
activity. And it makes you sad. And then you start feeling like a piece of shit. I was convinced this one fucking, this troll, he was calling me the jam scene Flava Flav. I was like, motherfucker, dude. I couldn't stop thinking about that. I'm like, damn, I'm just like a fucking side hoe. So I'm just like, and then I was realized, like, who gives a fuck what one person says?
Exactly.
You love what you do.
Yep.
You love what you do. You love what you're saying. You need to be confident in yourself. You know, like, if you don't trust yourself, then who's going to trust you?
Right. And I feel like the more that you can be authentic and be real and trusting in yourself, then that's magnetic, and people will respond to that. Whereas when you're starting to second guess yourself, that's when you really do sound like shit or whatever. You know what I'm saying? It feeds on itself either way.
I totally agree, bro.
Yeah.
I totally agree. It's like, you need both.
Yeah. I mean, you got to have balance. You got to have humility and all that kind of shit. But
that's why I wish we could sing a song for our Phils.
We got to write a song for the Phils.
Let's write a song called Phils.
I could see it now, dude. We could have a movie sort of splice Phil Jackson and Phil Lesh, like, shots together.
I love it, dude. I fucking love it, dude. We'll go do x-rays of Phil's jawline and shit.
Oh my god.
Oh, this has been a fun one, man. Thanks for having me.
Dude, I can't thank you enough, man. It's really great to talk to you. And
dude, let's be friends, dude. We get along.
We're both in Denver. Let's hang, you know.
Come on, I'll come hang out 6 feet from you, dog.
Yeah, we'll barbecue and shit. It'll be great.
I'm in. Let's do it. I'm in. Thanks.
All right, man. Well, thanks again.
No problem, bro. Yeah, let me know. Holler at me. I had a blast doing this. Multiple people say you got to be on Ross's show, and you're doing a great thing, dude. You're kicking ass, so keep rocking.
Right on, man. Well, you too. I look forward to hearing more of your show too.
But I'll see you, motherfucker. I mean, we ain't doing shit all summer. We're in Denver, dog. We don't even have to do this anymore. We can just do it face to face. Like Rona is like, once we trust, we'll look each other in the eyes. We'll see if we both have Rona or something. then we'll like kind of like, it's like an Irish stare down.
Rona stare down. Yeah.
A Rona stare down. Yeah, exactly.
Well, shit, man. Enjoy the rest of the day, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Later. All right, well, there you go. I hope you liked today's episode with Andy Frasco. If you did, why don't you leave us a review right here in the Apple Podcast Store? Go on and follow us on Instagram at Songs That Saved Me. And stay tuned, because we got lots more coming up right here on Songs That Saved Me.